Sidious eyed Dooku from beneath the hood of his cloak. Tell me, who is conducting this search? Dooku exhaled with purpose.
Skywalker and Kenobi.
Sidious took a long moment to respond.
The so-called Chosen One. And a Jedi with enough good fortune to almost make one believe in luck.
Without turning from the view, he added,
I am displeased by this turn of events, Lord Tyrannus. Greatly displeased.
My lord, the Jedi may search for others who contributed to fashioning the communications devices you distributed to Gunray, myself, and others. Also, there is the matter of Grievous's defeat at Belderone.
Sidious made a gesture accepting that defeat.
Do not trouble yourself about Belderone. It may suit our ultimate purpose to have the Republic believe that they have chased us from their precious core. As regards your concern for keeping secret my whereabouts, I am moved. But here, too, I begin to see a way to engineer events in our favor.
He paused to consider something, then said,
Yes, I begin to see the blazes along the trail Skywalker and Kenobi will follow.
Sidious turned to Dooku, grinning malevolently.
Their single-mindedness will deliver them into our hands, Lord Tyrannus. We will set our trap for them on Naos 3.
What would you have me do?
Nothing more than make arrangements, for you are needed elsewhere. Employ outsiders.
Dooku nodded.
It is done.
One small addendum. See to it that Obi-Wan Kenobi ceases to be an irritant.
He represents so forceful a threat to our plans?
Sidious shook his head.
But Skywalker does. And Kenobi? Kenobi has been as a father to him. Orphan Skywalker once and for all. And he will shift.
Shift?
To the dark side.
An apprentice?
Sidious gazed at him.
In good time, Lord Tyrannus. All in good time.
Having suffered through all 4 hours of Palpatine's State of the Republic address to the Senate, interrupted dozens of times by standing ovations, an archaic tradition not practiced since the era of Supreme Chancellor Valorum Aixes, Bail Organa watched from the backseat of the air taxi as a trio of assault cruisers lifted off into Coruscant's flame-orange sky, casting their wedge-shaped shadows on the spiraled roof of the Jedi Temple, Bail's destination. He instructed the droid pilot to set the taxi down on the temple's northeast landing platform, where 2 Jedi younglings were waiting for him. The opulence of the temple's wide corridors was lost on him, as he followed his escort to the room the Order used for public meetings, rather than the circular chamber reserved for private conclaves in the summit of the High Council spire. A hollow recording of Palpatine's speech was running in the center of the room when Bail was admitted. Around the hollow projector table sat Council members Yoda, Mace Windu, Sacy Tin, Ki-Adi Mundi, Shakti, Stassa Lee, Plo Koon, and Kit Fisto.
And so it is with a heavy heart that I commit 200,000 additional troopers to the Outer Rim sieges.
The hollow image of the Supreme Chancellor was saying.
Though in full confidence that the end of this brutal conflict is now in sight. Cast from the core, expelled from the Inner Rim and colonies, driven from the Mid-Rim, and soon to be exiled in the Spiral Arms, the Confederacy will pay a dear price for what they have brought down on our fair house.
Had enough? Stassa Lee asked while the Senate broke into applause. When no one objected, she deactivated the holoprojector. Turning to Bail, Yoda said,
Appreciate your visit, we do, Senator Organa.
Bail gestured broadly to the room's triangular windows and shook his head in dismay.
Coruscant is already in a celebratory mood. You can practically taste it in the air.
premature any celebration is,
Yoda said ruefully. Mace leaned forward in his chair.
What can Palpatine be thinking? Committing half of Coruscant's home force to the Outer Rim sieges?
Emboldened Palpatine is by what we achieved at Belderone.
Yoda compressed his lips in indignation.
A labyrinth of evil this war has become.
Mace ran a hand over his shaven head.
We can only hope that Obi-Wan and Anakin find their way to the source of this war before it's too late.
With a slurping sound, Anakin's right leg sank almost to the knee in the muck that passed for Naos III's main street. An equally automatic peak sound accompanied Anakin's reclaiming of the leg, and expletives flew from his lips as he hopped off on his left foot towards solid ground. Crossing his right leg over his left while standing, he tried to shake some of the filth from his boot, then pointed to a pinkish strand that refused to let go.
What is that?
He asked in alarmed disgust, with breath clouds punctuating his every word. Reluctantly, Obi-Wan leaned in to peer at the slick boot, not wanting to get too close. It could be something alive, or something that was once alive, or something that came from something alive. Lining both sides of the puddled street were low-slung prefab buildings, their alloy roofs capped with crystalline snow and bearded with thick icicles. Pieces of a collapsed skyway had been moved to one side of the street, left to marinate in a puddle much like the one Anakin had inadvertently waded into, and fashioned by areas of radiant heating that still functioned beneath the mostly ruined ceramicrete paving. Anakin began stomping his boot on the solid ice. Ultimately, the clingy, unidentifiable pink thing decided that it had had enough and flew off into a snowdrift. They continued their slog toward what seemed to be the heart of the place. The dispirited humanoids who had colonized the moon had never bothered to award a name to their principal population center, so it too was known as Naos III. Visitors expecting to find a typical spaceport found instead a cluster of fortified hilltops interconnected by bridges that spanned a delta of waterways. As befitted a place with such a dearth of creativity, the moon had attracted nomads and spacers of dubious character, eager to either lose or reinvent themselves. While Rodians and Lethan Twi'leks comprised the majority, humans and other humanoids were well represented. Despite the fact that the moon seemed a perfect place for a red-complected Twi'lek to hide, Obi-Wan doubted that Fa'ali Leh would be found here. To begin with, she would have certainly changed her name by now, possibly even the color of her complexion. According to Kassar, Leh had been in the business of transporting shipments of spice from Ryloth to worlds in Hutt space when Sinar had hired her to deliver the experimental spacecraft for which Kassar had constructed a transceiver identical to the one he had affixed to Gunray's mechno chair. With snow falling harder in Naos III, the two stopped to get their bearings. Obi-Wan gestured to a nearby cantina.
This has to be the 15th we've passed.
On this street, Anakin said. If we stop for a drink in each one, we'll be drunk before we reach the bridge.
With any luck.
Still, they're likely to be our best source of information. Anakin grinned.
Fine with me. Where do you want to start?
Completing a circle, Obi-Wan pointed to a cantina diagonally across from them. The Desperate Pilot. 4 hours later, half drunk and near frozen, they entered the final cantina before the bridge. Replacing two Rodians who stumbled away from the curved bar, they ordered drinks. Anakin sipped from his glass.
10 cantinas? As many Lethan females? And every one of them claims to have been born on world. I'd say we're in for a long stay.
Kassar didn't supply you with anything else to go on? Scars? Tattooed Leku? Anything? Anakin shook his head.
Nothing.
When Obi-Wan signaled for the human bartender, he added,
You order one more Twi'lek appetizer, I promise I'm gonna cut your arm off. Obi-Wan laughed.
I found the Izzy Mold at the last place to be very flavorful.
Seeing the bartender approach, Obi-Wan placed a sizable credit chip under his empty glass and slid it forward.
Another drink, and the rest is for you.
An athletic man with red hair that fell almost to his waist, the bartender eyed the credit chip.
Rather large remuneration for such a rudimentary libation. Perhaps you'd permit me to concoct something a trifle more flavorsome?
What I'd actually prefer is a bit of information.
Now, how did I guess?
We're looking for a Lethan female, Anakin said.
Who isn't?
Obi-Wan shook his head.
Strictly business.
That's what it often is with them. I suggest you try the Palace Hotel.
You don't understand. She used to be a pilot, with a taste for spice.
Obi-Wan watched the bartender closely. She would have arrived on Naos III within the past 10 or so years. The bartender's eyes narrowed.
Why didn't you say so to begin with? You mean Jen.
The name we know her by is Fa'ali Le.
My friends, on Naos III, a name is nothing more than a convenient handle.
But you do know her, Obi-Wan said.
I do.
Then you know where she can be found.
The bartender jerked a thumb.
Upstairs. Room 7.
They canceled the drink order and walked to the foot of a long flight of stairs.
Jedi mind trick?
Anakin asked.
If it was, I wasn't aware of performing it.
Obi-Wan led the way up their stairs and wrapped his hand on Room 7's green plastoid door.
Door's unlocked,
a voice said in basic from within. Obi-Wan hit the door release stud, then followed Anakin into the chilly room. Wearing trousers, boots, and an insulated jacket, Jen, perhaps Fa'ali Le, was lounging on a narrow bed, her back and Leku against the headboard. Beside her on a small table stood a half-full bottle of what Obi-Wan guessed was the local rocket fuel homebrew. Reaching for two clearly unwashed glasses, she said,
"Fix you a drink?"
"We're already at the legal limit," Anakin said, vigilant. The remark made her smile.
"Naos III doesn't have a legal limit, kid."
She took a healthy swallow from her own glass, eyeing them over the rim.
"I have to say, you're not what I expected."
"Who were you expecting?"
Obi-Wan said.
"Your classic rough-and-tumble types, black sun lackeys, bounty hunters. You two, you look more like lost Jedi."
She paused, then said,
"You want to do it here, or are you going to buy me a last meal?"
"Do what here?" Obi-Wan said.
"Kill me, of course."
Anakin took a forward step.
"There's always that possibility."
She glanced from him to Obi-Wan.
"Bad Jedi? Good Jedi?"
"We want to talk to you about a Star Courier you piloted for Sinar Advanced Projects."
She smiled in apparent recollection.
"An extraordinary ship. A work of genius. But I knew going in it was a job that would come back to haunt me. And so it has."
She threw back another drink.
"So who sent you? Sinar? Or was it the one the courier was built for?"
"Who was it built for?" Anakin said.
She regarded him for a moment.
"That's the funny thing. Sinar, Wraith Sinar himself, told me it was for a Jedi. But the guy I handed the yoke over to, he was no Jedi. Oh, he had a lightsaber and all, but I don't know, there was something off about him."
"Where did you deliver it?"
Anakin pressed.
"Well, to Coruscant, of course.
To an old building in the industrial quarter, west of the Senate. An area called the Works."
Macro binoculars pressed to his eyes, Mace studied the distant building top to bottom, his gaze lingering on broken windows, fissured ledges, canted balconies. Central to a complex of half a dozen structures, the building was more than 3 centuries old and going to ruin. For 2/3 of its towering height, it was an unadorned pillar with a rounded summit. Support for the superstructure was afforded by a circular base, reinforced by massive fins. Where the superstructure and the sloped tops of the buttresses met, the building was fenestrated by windows and antiquated gear-toothed docking gates. Many of the permaglass panels and skylights were intact, but time and corrosion had done their worst to the vertical hatches of the docking gates. An investigation was underway to determine who had raised the building and who owned it, although, judging by its location and prominence in the works, it appeared to have served as corporate headquarters for the factories and assembly plants that surrounded it. Mace and his team of Jedi, clone commandos, and intelligence analysts were a kilometer east of the structure in an area of squat peak-roofed foundries lorded over by smoke-belching permacrete stacks.
"Probe remotes are away, General Windu," an ARC reported.
Mace trained the macro binoculars on the flock of meter-wide spherical droids that were maneuvering with purposeful unevenness toward the building. The Senate Intelligence Oversight Committee had attempted to interdict the use of commandos and probe droids. In the minds of the committee members, the idea that a separatist stronghold could exist on Coruscant was absurd. Fortunately, and admittedly unexpectedly, Supreme Chancellor Palpatine had overruled the committee, and Mace had been allowed to compile a dream team that included not only ARC Commander Valiant and Captain Dine of Republic Intelligence, but also Jedi Master Shakti and several capable Padawans.
"No indications that the probes are being targeted," the ARC updated.
Mace watched the black spheres begin to drift through shattered windows and into areas of the superstructure where the building's facade had disintegrated and the bones of its plasteel skeleton were exposed.
"Hollow images of the interior coming in," Valiant said.
Mace lowered the macro binoculars and shifted his gaze to the field holoprojector. Dazzled by diagonal lines of static, the 3D images were of forlorn rooms, stretches of dark corridor, vast empty spaces.
"The building appears to be completely abandoned, General. No signs of droids or living beings, other than varieties common to similar manufacturing slums."
"Abandoned, perhaps, but not forgotten," Captain Dine said from behind Valiant.
"The building's live. It has power and illumination."
"Doesn't mean much," May said. "Many structures in this district were self-powered, often by dangerous, highly unstable fuels."
He gestured broadly.
"There's still belching smoke."
Dine nodded. "But this one shows periodic and recent use of power." Mace turned to Valiant.
"All right, Commander. Give the go-ahead."
From behind and to both sides of the observation post, lats lifted off into the smoke-filled sky, doorway gunners traversing the repeating blasters and commandos standing ready to deploy from the gunship's troop bay. Elsewhere, ATTEs and other mobile artillery vehicles began to lumber across the debris-filled urbanscape toward the target. Valiant turned to the troopers who made up Oryk team.
"The building is a free strike zone. You are to consider anyone we find inside to be hostile."
He slammed the fresh power pack into his short-stocked blaster.
"Troopers, find, fix, finish."
Valiant swung and waved a signal to Shakti.
"I'll ride with Oryk team. You have Bacta."
As beautiful as a flower, as deadly as a viper, Shakti was the Jedi Master one wanted by one side in chaotic circumstances. Oryk team's gunship was already packed with commandos and Padawans by the time he clambered inside. Lifting off, the lat/I aimed straight for the summit of the building. The strategy was to work from the top down in the hope of flushing hostiles out through the lowest levels, where infantry and artillery units were already taking up firing positions around the buttressed base. The entire area was undermined with tunnels that had been used for transporting workers, droids, and materials. While it wasn't possible to monitor every entrance and egress, many of the principal tunnels that opened on the building's sub-basements had been outfitted with sensors capable of detecting droids or flesh and bloods. No functioning docking bay large enough to accommodate a gunship had been discovered. Instead, the Lat/I carried the team to the largest of the blown-out windows below the summit and hovered there while everyone was inserted. Leaping the gap, Mace activated his lightsaber and instructed the Padawans to follow suit. Weapons raised to their chests, the commandos spread out in fire and maneuver squads and began to move deeper into the building, checking out each room and alcove before declaring any level secure. They worked their way down and down, without encountering resistance or finding anything of interest. "Quiet as a tomb, General," Valiant said, when the top 10 levels had been secured. Mace studied the 3D map displayed by the Ark's wrist gauntlet projector. "Inform Bacta team that we will rally with them in designated Sector 3. Valiant was about to speak when his comlink toned.
"Commander, this is Bacta team leader," a voice said. "We have a functioning docking gate on level 6 that shows evidence of recent use. And sir, wait until you get a look at the landing zone."
The floor that served as a landing area was scarcely large enough for a gunship, but it gleamed as if scrubbed and polished daily by custodial droids.
"Everyone stay exactly where you are," Captain Dine said when Mace and the rest of Oryk team appeared at the mouth of a corridor that intersected the docking bay at its lengthwise center point. Deployed in a circle formation, Shakti and the Padawans who had entered with Bacta were clustered in the middle of the floor. 30 meters to Mace's right, Dine and two other intelligence officers were interpreting the data being sent to them by several probe droids, meandering with design throughout the room, some of them misting the floor with a highly volatile substance.
"A Hoopla Passa Tisk sloop occupied this docking bay less than 2 standard weeks ago," Dine said. "The arrangement of its landing gear and aft boarding ramp matched the footprint of the Punwarka 116 class that launched from Geonosis during the battle there."
"Dooku ship," Mace said.
"A reasonable supposition, Master Windu," Dine said loudly. After several moments of gazing at the monitor screens of his equipment and conferring with his associates, he added, "The floor reveals traces of two beings who were here contemporaneous with the sloop."
Green light from one of the drifting droids played across the alloy floor panels. Dine directed the droid to concentrate on certain areas and studied the data again.
"The first being exited the sloop and walked to this point." He indicated an area close to the open gate. "Taking into consideration trace impressions and the length of the being's stride, I would hazard that being one stands 195 centimeters in height and was wearing boots."
It was Dooku, Mace thought.
The droid focused its lights on another area, and Dine continued.
"Here, being one met with being two. Lighter in weight, perhaps shorter in stature, and wearing..."
Dine consulted what Mace assumed to be some sort of database.
"What can best be described as soft-soled footwear, or slippers. This unknown being came from the direction of the building's east turbo lifts and accompanied Dooku, for all intents and purposes, to a balconied niche above the docking gate. Following the same route, the pair returned to the docking bay and separated. Dooku to his ship, our unknown quarry, presumably to the turbo lifts."
Tasking the probe droids to track the prints of the second being, Dine began to trail them, waving for Mace, Shakti, and the commandos to follow. Mace and Shakti took the point, with the Padawans and commandos strung out behind. By the time the two Jedi Masters caught up with Dine and his droids, the intelligence analyst was standing at the door to a dated turbo lift.
"Verified," Dine said. "Being two used the turbo lift."
Turning to the wall, he pressed his gloved right hand to the call stud.
When the summoned car appeared, he affixed a scanner to the control pad inside. The car's memory tells us that it arrived from Sub-Basement 2. If we fail to discover evidence of our unknown quarry there, we'll have to work our way back up, one level at a time until we do. The turbo lift was just roomy enough for Dyne, his associates, Mace, Shakti, the two team commanders, and two probe droids. Comm-linking troopers outside the building, Valiant ordered them to make their way to Sub-Basement 2, but forewarned them to stay clear of the east turbo lift and any nearby corridors or tunnels. The probe droids were first to exit the car when it stopped, misting the corridor in both directions. One of the droids hadn't gone 5 meters before it stopped in mid-flight and began playing its detection lights across the floor. "Footprints," Dyne said with enthusiasm. "We're still on track." Stepping carefully from the car, he followed the probe droids to the entrance of a wide tunnel. After the droids had disappeared inside and returned, Dyne swung to Mace, who was waiting with everyone else at the base of the turbo lift. "The prints end here. From this point on, the unknown used a vehicle. Certainly a repulsor lift of some sort, although the droids aren't detecting any phantom emissions." Mace and Shakti joined Dyne and his teammates at the tunnel entrance. Shakti peered into the darkness. "Where does it lead?" Dyne consulted a holo map. "If we can trust a map that's older than any of us, it connects to tunnels all over the works, to adjacent buildings, to the foundries, to a one-time landing field. There must be 100 branches.
"Forget the branches," Mace said. "What's at the far end of this one?"
Dyne caught up a series of displays and studied them in silence. At last, he said, "The principal tunnel leads all the way to the western limit of the Senate District." Turning to face Shakti and the clone commanders, Mace said,
"We're going to need more troops."
In the Supreme Chancellor's Senate office building chambers, Yoda sat staring across the desk at Palpatine, silhouetted against the long window that overlooked Western Coruscant.
"I understand your concerns entirely, Master Yoda," he was saying. "More important, I am sympathetic to them. But the Outer Rim sieges must continue. Despite what you may think, and notwithstanding the extraordinary powers the Senate has deemed fit to bestow on me these past 5 years, I am one voice in a welter."
"Galvanized by your State of the Republic address, the Senate was."
"My address was a reflection of the spirit of the times, Master Yoda. What's more, I spoke from my heart."
"Doubt you, I do not. But too soon your encouragements came. Celebrates imminent victory, Coruscant does, when far from ended the war is."
Palpatine's frown contained a hint of warning, of malice.
"After 3 years of fear, Coruscant craves relief."
"Agree with you, I do. But how from the seizure of Outer Rim worlds is relief sustained? Too many new fronts the Senate urges us to open. Too dispersed the Jedi are to serve effectively. A reasonable strategy we lack."
"Master Yoda, forgive my frankness, but if the Jedi are indeed too widely scattered to coordinate the sieges, then the burden will have to fall to my naval commanders."
Yoda compressed his lips and shook his head.
"Answer foremost to the Jedi, our troopers do. Forged an alliance with them, we have. Forged in fire, this fidelity has been."
Palpatine sat upright, as if struck.
"I'm certain I misconstrue your meaning, but you almost make it sound as if our army was created for the Jedi."
"Not true,"
Yoda snapped.
"For the Republic and none other."
Appeased, Palpatine said,
"Then perhaps the clones can be trained to respond to others, as well as they respond to the Jedi."
Yoda made a glum face.
"Trained the troopers can be, but wrong this strategy remains."
"Then you will challenge the Senate's decision?"
Yoda shook his head.
"Sworn by oath to uphold you, we are."
Palpatine spread his hands.
That does not instill confidence, Master Yoda. If it's nothing more than an oath, then you are duty-bound to reconsider.
Reconsidered we have, Supreme Chancellor.
You imply no threat, I trust.
No threat.
Palpatine forced a fatigued exhale.
As I've told you on many occasions, I do not have the luxury of seeing this world through the Force. I see only the real world.
No problem there would be if the real world all there was.
Unfortunately, we who are not attuned to the Force have that on Jedi authority only.
Yoda wagged his forefinger at Palpatine.
To end this war, more we will have to do than defeat Grievous and his army of war machines.
These Sith to whom you keep referring.
Palpatine fell silent in thought, then said,
Tell me, how goes the hunt for Darth Sidious?
Yoda leaned forward for emphasis.
Coming closer to him, are we?
In a forward hold of Grievous's flagship, Dooku watched the cyborg general duel with his elite guards, four of his trophy lightsabers in constant motion, parrying thrusts of the guards' pulse weapon staffs, slicing the recycled air a hair breadth from the expressionless faces of his opponents, incapacitating arm and leg servos when he could. Grievous was fast, and so were his elite guards. They had the advantage of size and brute strength. They executed moves almost faster than the human eye could follow.
Dooku had taught Grievous well, and Grievous had taught his guards well.
Grievous and his guards were dancing, going through their programmed motions. An Ataro attack answered by Shicho. Shicho answered by Lusma.
Dooku couldn't suffer another moment of it.
No, no, stop, stop! Power moves served you well on Hyporia against Jedi such as Dakmon Barek and Tarsir. But I pity you should have to face off against any of the Council Masters.
He called into hand his courtly, curved-handled lightsaber and drew a rapid X in the air, a Makashi flourish.
Do I need to demonstrate what responses you can expect from Shakti or Obi-Wan Kenobi? From Mace Windu? Or stars help you, Yoda?
He flicked his blade quickly, ridding two of the guards of their staffs, then placing the glowing tip a millimeter from Grievous's death-helmeted visage.
Finesse, artfulness, economy. Otherwise, my friend, I fear that you will end up beyond the repair of even the Geonosians. Do you take my meaning?
His vertically slit eyes unfathomable, Grievous nodded.
I take your meaning, my lord.
Dooku withdrew his blade.
Again then, with some measure of polish, if I'm not asking for too much.
Dooku seated himself and watched them go at it. He glanced at the hold's hollow projector table a moment before a blue hollow image of Sidious appeared above it.
My time is at hand, he told himself,
as he centered himself proudly on the transmission grid, Grievous behind him, down on one knee, with head lowered.
My lord, he said, I've been waiting.
There have been matters that warranted my close attention, Lord Tyrannus.
Born, no doubt, of my failure at Naos III, the bounty hunters I sent failed.
The Force is strong in Skywalker.
Yes, my lord. Very strong. Next time, I will deal with the Jedi personally.
Yes, that time is drawing near, Lord Tyrannus. But first, we need to provide the Jedi with something that distracts them from hunting me.
Sidious's upper lip was definitely twitching.
Was this worry? Worry from someone fond of saying that things were going precisely as planned?
What has happened, my lord?
The Twi'lek's information led them to our rendezvous on Coruscant,
Sidious said in a scurrilous voice.
Dooku was stunned.
Is there a greater danger?
They think they have my scent, Lord Tyrannus, and perhaps they do.
Can you leave Coruscant, my lord? Sidious fell silent for a long moment, then said,
Perhaps, Lord Tyrannus. Perhaps.
If not, then I will come to you. Sidious shook his head.
That won't be necessary. I told you that their search for me would benefit us before too long, and thanks to you, I begin to see a way.
What is thy bidding, master?
Grievous asked from behind Dooku. Sidious turned slightly toward Grievous, but continued to speak to Dooku.
The Jedi have divided their forces. We must do the same. I will deal with the ones on Coruscant. I need you to deal with the rest.
My fleet stands ready, master,
Grievous said, still without raising his gaze from the grid.
The Republic is monitoring you?
Sidious asked the general.
Yes, master.
Can you divide the fleet judiciously?
It can be done, master.
Good. Good. Then move however many ships are needed to crush and occupy Tithe.
Again, Dooku was stunned. So too was Grievous.
Is that wise, master, after what happened at Belderone?
Sidious adopted a faint grin.
More than wise, General. Inspired.
But Tithe, my lord, Dooku said. Less a world than a corpse.
It has some strategic value, does it not, General?
As a jump point, master. But a dubious prize, regardless, when far better targets exist.
It may prove costly to us, my lord. The Republic will almost certainly flatten it. Dooku said.
Not if the Jedi are convinced that it must be retaken rather than destroyed.
Confusion wrinkled Dooku's forehead.
How will we convince them?
We won't have to, Lord Tyrannus. Their own investigations will lead them to that conclusion. Moreover, Kenobi and Skywalker will oversee the counterattack.
Indeed, my lord.
They will not pass up an opportunity to capture Count Dooku. They are obsessed with bringing their enemies to justice, instead of merely administering justice themselves.
It is their way.
Then you don't mind serving as bait to lure them there?
Dooku inclined his head.
As ever, I am at your disposal, my lord.
Sidious grinned once more.
Hold Kenobi and Skywalker, Lord Tyrannus. Entertain them. Play to their weakness. Demonstrate your mastery, as you have on previous occasions.
Grievous made a meaningful sound.
I will do the same with their warships, Master.
No, General.
Sidious cut in.
I have something else in mind for you and the rest of the fleet. But tell me, can you tuck your charges somewhere safe for the time being?
The planet Utapau comes to mind, Lord Sidious.
I will leave that to you.
And when I have seen to that, Master?
General, I'm certain you recall the plans we discussed some time ago regarding the final stage of the war.
Regarding Coruscant?
Regarding Coruscant, yes.
Sidious paused, then said,
We must accelerate those plans. Prepare, General, for what will be your finest hour.
Fifty meters ahead of Mace in the tunnel, Shakti held up her hand, motioning for him to stop. Angling his purple blade to the floor, Mace turned to relay the signal to the commandos behind him. Shakti's whisper reached him through the Force. Movement ahead. She gestured to the mouth of an intersecting tunnel, just beyond where she stood. Her profile limned blue by the glow of her raised lightsaber. Faint light spilled from the opening, as if someone with a handheld luma was approaching on foot. Mace waved a signal to Commander Valiant, whose team moved forward stealthily, hugging the walls, their T-visor helmets allowing them to see in the dark. The team was deep below an area of the works called the Grungeon Block. Encompassing 20 square kilometers, the block had originally been a production center for Servodroid, Huvico, and Nebula Manufacturing. But it had fallen on hard times when its three principal clients had declared bankruptcy. In the days since the raid, Mesa's team had searched nearly every nook and cranny of the confusion of tunnels and shafts that undermined the Grungeon and similar assembly areas. Republic intelligence had discovered that the building where Dooku's recent presence had been detected was owned by Limerge Power, a corporation headquartered on the planet Tithe. During the previous Emperor's reign, Limerge was rumored to have been responsible for funding acts of piracy directed against Trade Federation vessels in the Outer Rim. And it was those acts of piracy that led ultimately to the Trade Federation being granted the right to defend their vessels with battle droids. Some suspect that Limerge might have been in league with the Sith. 10 kilometers into the tunnel that led to the Limerge building's sub-basement, a shaft had been found, leading to a deeper, older tunnel that also ran east toward the Senate District. In appearance, the parallel tunnels were similar, save for the fact that the floor of the older one hosted an ancient maglev rail. The probe droids had discovered places along the rail where the accumulated decades of dust and debris had been blown away by the rapid passage of a repulsor lift vehicle of some sort. With no other clues to go on, the team had made the maglev tunnel the focus of the investigation. An extensive search of the Limerge building had revealed the remains of several Trang Robotics Duelist Elite droids that had been reduced to durasteel pieces by a lightsaber. Only Sidious, Dooku, or Sidious's previous apprentice could have performed the amputations. By now, Mace could hear movement and soft voices ahead. Hardly a good tactic for hostiles intent on springing an ambush, but one never knew. Standing nearby, Valiant looked to Mace for the go signal. When Mace nodded, Valiant said, "Light it up!" Weapons raised, gas and fragmentation grenades enabled, the commandos sprinted into the intersecting tunnel, firing tracer bolts into the gloom. Tight on their heels, Mace heard Valiant yell, "Down on the floor! Don't move! I said don't move!" More fire erupted. Then several commando voices were shouting, "Stay still! Down on your faces! Hands up! All four of them!" All four of them, Mace thought. Edging through the commandos, he reached Valiant, whose blastech was aimed at a cowering crowd of 30 or so four-armed insectoid aliens, who were babbling in some language other than basic, or speaking it with an accent so thick as to make their words unintelligible. "Lower your weapons," Mace told the commandos. "And someone bring that interpreter droid forward." Mace's command was relayed down the line, and a moment later, a highly polished silver protocol droid tottered into the tunnel, muttering to itself.
"I don't understand how I've gone from serving the Separatists to serving the Republic. Did I undergo a partial memory wipe?"
"Droid," Mace said, grabbing hold of TC-16 and pointing him in the direction of the terrified aliens. "See if you can make sense of what these folk are saying." The droid listened to the babbling, responded in kind, and turned to face Mace.
"They are units, General, speaking their native language, which is called Yun."
Mace regarded the huddled, shivering group. "What are they doing down here?" TC-16 listened, then said,
"They say that they haven't the slightest idea where they are, General. They arrived on Coruscant in a shipping container that was airdropped at a decrepit landing platform some 20 kilometers from here. The personage who was to have guided them into the depths of the Uskru sector stole all their credit and abandoned them in the works."
"Undocumented refugees," Valiant said. Mace frowned. The tunnels beneath the Grungeon block held countless surprises. Shakti joined them.
"These corridors are highways for people who want to enter central Coruscant illegally."
Dine sighed in disappointment.
"Our chances for picking up Sidious's trail decrease with each person who passes."
"How far are we from the Senate District?"
Shakti asked.
"Within a couple of kilometers,"
Dine said. We might think about going directly to the buildings Limerage Power once owned in the city core and see if we can't work our way toward the works from those. Mace considered the idea, then shook his head.
Not yet.
Mace waved everyone back into motion, then fell into step with Shakti.
Wild Gundark chase?
She nodded. Only because our quarry is aware that we're closing in on him. He failed to silence the ones Obi-Wan and Anakin searched out, and by now he knows that we've discovered his and Dooku's den. It's unlikely he will wait around for us to surprise him.
That's true. But there's much to gain from simply identifying him. If not here, then by means of something Obi-Wan and Anakin discover on Tithe.
They walked in silence for a long while. They were a kilometer closer to the outlying areas of the Senate District when Dine called to them from behind. Mace saw that the intelligence analysts and commandos were gathered some 20 meters away. He and Shakti had been so engrossed in their private thoughts that neither of them had noticed the probe droids stopping to investigate something. Joining the others, the Jedi watched the droids hover with clear purpose in front of a large niche in the tunnel wall. Dine's handheld sensor needed only a moment to discover a small control panel that operated the niche's sliding door. The door concealed the entrance to a narrow, dimly lit corridor. And all but hiding in plain sight, a repulsor lift speeder bike, semicircular in design, with an arc of concentric seat and a single steering handle. As big as life, Palpatine's holo image spoke from atop a projector table in a private comm lounge aboard a Republican frigate. With R2-D2 standing off to one side of the transmission grid, Anakin hung on the Supreme Chancellor's every word.
Of course the Council doesn't understand. Surely you don't find that surprising.
They reject every suggestion I make. On principle, I'm beginning to think.
It's obvious that you're upset, Anakin, but you must be patient. Your time will come.
When, sir? Palpatine smiled lightly.
I can't see into the future, my boy.
Anakin's face contorted. What if I told you that I could?
I would believe you. Tell me what you see.
Coruscant.
Are we in danger?
I'm not certain. I just feel that I need to be there. Palpatine gazed away from the holocam.
I suppose I could invent some pretext.
His gaze returned to Anakin.
What does Master Kenobi say?
He's the one who suggested I contact you, Anakin said sharply.
It sounds to me that the recapture of Tithe could prove very important toward ending the war. I don't understand all of it. The Jedi Council is being very secretive with me.
Anakin fought the temptation to reveal everything about the search for Darth Sidious. He glanced at R2-D2 as if expecting commiseration, but the astromech only swiveled his dome, his processor status indicator flashing from blue to red. Finally, Anakin said, I don't know what to do, sir. Palpatine adopted a sympathetic expression.
It's decided. I shall prevail upon the Council to order you back to the core. No one needs further proof of how intrepid you are or how committed you are to defeating our enemies.
No, Anakin said in a rush. No, thank you, sir, but I'm needed on Tithe. Dooku is there.
Yes, Dooku is the key to everything just now. Despite all our victories in the inner systems, do you suspect he and General Grievous may have some secret strategy?
If they do, Obi-Wan and I will defeat them before they can implement it.
The Republic counts on it.
Safeguard Coruscant, sir. Safeguard everyone there.
I will, my boy. And rest assured that I will call on you if I need you.
With assistance from the probe droids, the discolored panels at the end of the corridor unlocked and parted. Brown robe swirling behind him and lightsaber in hand, Mace barreled through the doorway, with Shakti and the commandos close behind. By rote, the troopers spread out, quickly and efficiently, but also unnecessarily.
Surprise, Shakti said flatly. Another corridor.
Another corridor closer, May said. The tunnel the team had followed from the hidden niche had led them through a maze of twists, turns, forks, steep climbs, and sudden drops. For 2 kilometers, walls, ceiling, and floor were damp from water that had trickled down through Coruscant's layered surface. His eyes fixed on the display screen of his data processor, Captain Dine ambled toward Mace and Shakti.
Master Jedi, our search is about to take us to a whole new level.
Mace looked around the tunnel for signs of a concealed turbo lift or staircase.
Up or down? Shakti asked, equally bewildered.
I didn't mean new level in the literal sense. Dine indicated the hovering probe droids, which were eager to have the team follow them east. If the prints lead us far enough, we're going to end up in the sub-basements of 500 Republica. 500 Republica. Home to thousands of Coruscant's wealthiest senators, celebrities, shipping magnates, and media tycoons. And one of them, very possibly, a Sith Lord.
There was little the Confederacy or the Republic could add to the damage Limeridge power had inflicted on Tide generations earlier. From deep space, the surface looked as if it had been licked by a flare from its primary, or had had a brush with an enormous meteor. But Tide's scars owed to none of that. The planet had been spared everything but Limeridge itself, whose attempts to exploit Tide's abundant deposits of natural plasma had invoked a cataclysm of global proportions. The 3 drifting hulks that had been Republic cruisers might have been caught up in the cataclysm, but were in fact casualties of the Separatist attack, which had come swiftly and without quarter.
Just once I wish we could repay Dooku and Grievous in kind, Anakin said over the tactical net, as Red Squadron dropped from the belly of the Terminator and rocketed toward Tithe.
The fact that we don't is what keeps us centered in the Force, Obi-Wan said.
The 2 starfighters were flying abreast, almost wingtip to wingtip, astromech droids R2-D2 and R4-P17 in their respective sockets. Tithe's Rubicund Star was at their backs, and the ships that made up the Separatist flotilla were strung menacingly above the planet's northern hemisphere. With Tithe's brood of moons clustered in a 200-degree arc, the Separatists had worked quickly to strew mines at several hyperspace jump points, leaving the Republic ships with only a narrow window in which to revert to real space.
Prepare to break hard to starboard, Anakin said over the net to the entire squadron. Watch your countdown displays. On my mark. 10 seconds to break.
Obi-Wan kept his eyes on the counter at the bottom of the instrument panel's tactical display screen. At the 0 mark, he yanked the yoke to one side and peeled away for clear space. Behind the squadrons of V-Wings and Jedi and ARC-170 starfighters, the Republic battle group broke to port, drenching the distant Separatist ships with furious broadsides. The Separatist ships absorbed the first hits without flinching. Vessels that sustained damage began to drift to the rear. Then the battle group responded with an equally ferocious barrage. No sooner did the barrage end than the starfighter squadrons regrouped, accelerating in an effort to reach the big enemy ships before their cannons or shields could repower. The droid fighters swooped in to meet them halfway, and the tight formations observed by both sides dissolved into dozens of separate skirmishes.
They're being shot to pieces, Red 7 said over the net.
They know their job, Anakin responded. That job was to buy Red Squadron enough time to skirt the main action and race down Tithe's gravity well. The Jedi had insisted that an attempt be made to take Dooku alive. Obi-Wan and Anakin didn't need to be reminded of what had happened only weeks earlier on Cato Nymoidia when they had gone after Viceroy Gunray. But they were not about to forego a chance to capture the Sith Lord. Red Squadron's intended insertion point was 20 degrees south of Tithe's North Pole, where the Separatist line was most dispersed.
with droid fighters still pouring from the curving arms of Trade Federation Lucre Hulks, and the recoiling barrels of Commerce Guild cannons filling local space with storms of unleashed energy, Anakin led the starfighters on a weaving course through the heart of the enemy fleet.
"No signature for Grievous's cruiser," he said to Obi-Wan. "None of the ships of the Separatist leadership are here."
Obi-Wan glanced at the wireframe display of his threat assessment screen.
"All the more reason to believe that Dooku was ordered here by Sidious."
"Then where's everyone else?" Obi-Wan was troubled by the thought, but didn't admit to it.
"Dooku will know,"
he started to say, when the starfighter's proximity scanner stammered a warning.
"Techno-Union starship is veering to intercept us. Droid fighters are away and locking on,"
Red 3 added. Obi-Wan acknowledged.
"Angle shields. We can outfly them."
"We'll end up too far off course," Anakin said.
"We're almost at the insertion point,"
Obi-Wan said. "That starship isn't just going to move aside. Form up on me. We'll show them how well we improvise." Rolling to port, Obi-Wan fell in behind Anakin and fired his thrusters. Trailing behind, Red Squadron accelerated and banked for the narrow-waisted vessel.
"Ready proton torpedoes," Anakin said. "Sow them just above the fuel cells."
Point defense turbolasers sought the starfighters as they fell on the ship. Corkscrewing missiles claimed Red 10 and Red 12, both of which disappeared in angry blossoms of fire. Sensing its sudden vulnerability, the huge vessel launched additional droid fighters. In the instant it lowered its shields to route power to the sublight drives, Red Squadron attacked. Tight on Anakin, the 10 remaining starfighters yawed for the waist of the ship, just forward of its cluster of cylindrical fuel cells. Dropping his craft to within 100 meters of the pinched hull, Anakin began to hug the surface, surging onto a course that would whip Red Squadron through a tight circle around the forward ends of the fuel cells.
"Torpedoes away!"
he said at the halfway mark. Obi-Wan triggered the launchers and watched two torpedoes burn toward the target. Behind him, the rest of Red Squadron did the same. Hits began to score, fire and gas fountaining from breaches in the ship's dark hull. The disabling run completed, Anakin boosted for Tithe.
"She's finished!"
In a single file, Red Squadron followed. Almost instantly, the punctured vessel exploded. Red 9 disappeared at the edge of the roiling detonation zone, and Red 7 wheeled off into the void with both wings sheared away. Obi-Wan regained control of his craft and once more attached himself to Anakin 6.
"Insertion point in 15 seconds, Anakin updated.
Obi-Wan clamped his hands on the violently shaking yoke as Red Squadron ripped into Tithe's plundered atmosphere. Punching through the blankets of clouds at suicidal velocity, Obi-Wan's starfighter went into a roll. Anakin's voice grew loud in his ears.
"Nose up! Nose up!"
With effort, Obi-Wan leveled out of his plummet, his stomach lurching up into his throat. Reaching forward, he engaged the starfighter's topographic sensors.
"Head count,"
he said into his helmet microphone. Five voices responded. Reds 8 and 11 were lost.
"Locking in target coordinates," Anakin said.
Red Squadron flew just above the contours of land that had once been as lush as the area surrounding Feed on Naboo. Now a desert, save for areas where exotic species of vegetation thrived in lakes of red-brown water, their jagged shorelines crusted yellow and black.
"Target facility is 10 kilometers west," Anakin said.
Soaring from the edge of a high plateau, the six starfighters dropped into a broad valley. Hailfire droids wheeled out to greet them with volleys of surface-to-air missiles. Turbo laser cannons affixed to Trade Federation landing ships cut the gray-yellow sky to ribbons. Staps lifted into the air, and squads of infantry droids hurried for armed skimmers. Unequipped to defend itself against the onslaught, tattered Red Squadron banked broadly to the north, evading plasma beams and flak from exploding heatseekers. Anakin and Obi-Wan paid out the last of their proton torpedoes in futile attempts to save Reds 3, 4, and 5. bursts from their laser cannons crippled two enemy speeders and countless droid fighters, sending them crashing into the contaminated terrain. Red 6 vanished. When they had juked their way through the worst of it, Anakin came alongside Obi-Wan. It was just the two of them now. Point 3-0, Anakin said, on the landing platform. Obi-Wan gazed out the right side of the cockpit at what had been an enormous plasma-generating facility. Fractured containment domes and adjacent roofless structures revealed toppled extraction shafts, exploded activators, and tumbled walkways. In the center of the complex stood an elevated square of corroded ferrocrete, crowded with enemy fighter craft and bearing a single Geonosian fantail of distinctive design.
Dooku's sloop.
The words had scarcely left Obi-Wan's mouth when battle droids began to gush from the facility and out onto the landing platform.
I guess we're not going in through the front door, Obi-Wan said.
There's another way, Anakin said. We go in through the north dome. Obi-Wan looked over his left shoulder at the partially collapsed hemisphere. The lid that had once topped the plasma containment structure was long gone, and the resultant circular opening was large enough for a starfighter to thread. With its 53 sky docks, hundreds of private turbolifts, arrays of hidden security armaments, and towering atria, 500 Republica was a world unto itself, containing more technology than many Outer Rim worlds and more residents than some. The sky-piercing structure was the unrivaled gem of the Senate District and the elegant cynosure of the district's prestigious ambassadorial sector. Mace could feel the oppressive weight of the structure bearing down on him as the team entered 500 Republica's Level 1 sub-basement. Square kilometers of supportive ferrocrete and durasteel, crammed with whining, whirring machines that kept the tower stable, aloft, secure, climate-controlled, and supplied with water and power. The team had had to wait hours for Republica security to grant them permission to enter and carry on with the investigation. For a time, Mace had considered appealing to Palpatine for permission, since the Supreme Chancellor had an upper-level suite in the building. For company, the probe droids had scores of custodial and maintenance droids, but the trail to Sidious had gone cold. Mace gazed down the tunnel the team had taken.
Could we have missed something along the way?
The droids wouldn't, Dine responded. Mace gestured to the smudged and stained ferrocrete floor.
Why would the prince suddenly end right here?
Dine compressed his lips and shook his head.
Maybe someone carried him here by repulsor lift.
Unless you're suggesting he levitated across the floor.
He thought about it for a long moment, then said,
All right, for the sake of argument, let's say that he did levitate here. There'll be prints at his starting point, May said.
Dine scanned the sub-basement, pursed his lips, and blew out his breath.
We're going to need a lot more probe droids.
How many more? May said.
A lot.
Dine took a comm from his belt and was about to activate it when the floor began to tremble.
A quake?
Mace asked Shakti.
She shook her head.
I'm not sure what...
A second jolt shook the sub-basement.
Feels like something rammed the building, Dine said.
The next shudder was accompanied by the distant sound of a powerful explosion. Lights in the sub-basement faded momentarily, then returned to full illumination. Also at a far remove, klaxons and sirens blared. Stretching out with the force, May sensed danger, frenzy, pain, and death.
Where's the nearest exit?
Dine pointed to his left. The tunnel to the east sky dock. Flanked by commandos, Mace and Shakti raced off. The tunnel to the east sky dock shook as they hurried through mixed-species crowds of frightened pedestrians heading toward and away from 500 Republica. On the huge quadrangular sky dock, humans, humanoids, and aliens were crouched behind parked limos, taxis, and private yachts, or hurrying for the entrance to the upper-level maglev platform.
Shouts and screams punctuated the drone of overhead traffic. Panic gripped the free travel sky lanes. Taxis and transports were swerving in all directions, careening into one another and the sides of buildings, making desperate rooftop and plaza landings. Higher, a plunging vehicle, a boxy cargo ship engulfed in flames, came streaking through a horizontal auto-navigation lane, surrendering some of its velocity to a violent collision with a public transport pod, before continuing its fiery plunge toward the bottom of the canyon. Mace tracked the ill-fated ship for a moment, then tilted his head back and put the edge of his hand to his brow. Distant buildings shimmered as if miraged by heat. The district's defensive shield had been raised. Higher still, something was wrong with the flickering sky. Light flared behind stratified clouds, and thunder of a kind reverberated from the summits of the taller buildings. Far to the south, Coruscant's pale blue mantle was hashed into triangles and slivers by white contrails. In their oblate pools of white skin, Shakti's eyes were wide when she looked at Mace. "An attack," she said in stunned disbelief. In the ruined archive hall of Limeridge Power's plasma facility, Count Dooku waited for Kenobi and Skywalker to arrive. The room was enormous by any standard, 30 meters high and three times that in circumference. Dooku took a moment to set in place his compact welcoming device, then hurried through a series of decontamination chambers into the facility's control room, which overlooked the rear of the archive hall and the vast space enclosed by the containment dome itself. There, he activated a second small holoprojector and positioned himself for the holocam. At long last, the two Jedi rushed headlong into the hall, only to stop upon spying his life-sized holo image emanating from the compact holoprojector he had left behind.
"Dooku," young Skywalker said, "show yourself."
Rooms distant, Dooku merely spread his hands in a gesture of greeting and aimed his words at the holoprojector's microphone.
"Stand not amazed, young Jedi. Is this not the way you had your first glimpse of Lord Sidious?"
Instead of replying, Kenobi touched Skywalker on the arm, and the two of them began to scan the hall, no doubt in an attempt to locate him through the Force.
"You won't find me, Jedi."
"We know you're here, Dooku," Kenobi said suddenly, and with irksome audio distortion.
"We can sense you."
Dooku sighed in disappointment. They weren't hearing him. Worse, the video feed was also becoming hopelessly corrupted. More through the Force than the holocam feed, he saw them moving toward the very doorway he had taken to reach the control room. Exceptional, he thought. Despite his mastery of the Ki-Tech technique for hiding oneself in the Force, they had located him. Plucking his comm from his belt, Dooku's right thumb leapt across the small touchpad. Heralded by the sound of metallic footfalls, 50 infantry droids crowded into the archive hall through two opposing doorways.
"Beginning to...
things almost as much... I hate sand,"
Skywalker was saying to his former mentor as he raised his lightsaber over one shoulder. Kenobi spread his legs and brought his blade directly in front of him.
"Then you must try to sweep up."
Touched by their camaraderie, Dooku smiled to himself. Darth Sidious had his work cut out for him if he ever expected to turn Skywalker to the dark side. He thumbed a final comm key, and with that, the droids leveled their blaster rifles at the Jedi and opened fire. Yoda surrendered himself to the current of the Force. Sometimes, when the current was swift and steadfast, he could see through the eyes of his fellow Jedi, almost as if they were the temple's remote sensors. And sometimes when the current was especially forceful, when it surged as if descending from great heights, he could hear the voice of Qui-Gon Jinn as clearly as if he were still alive. "Master Yoda," he might say, "we still have much to learn. The Force remains a code only partially deciphered.
but another key has been found. We will become stronger than we have ever been.
Yoda's eyes snapped open. A disturbance in the Force, of such magnitude that he had been hurled from the current. An attack! He perceived Mace running down corridors in the temple, then turned as Mace rushed through the doorway.
Tin, Kun, Ki-Adi-Mundi, and some of the others are on their way up the well, Mace said. I sent Stas Ali to assist Shakti in guarding Chancellor Palpatine.
Yoda nodded sagely.
Well trained the Supreme Chancellor's Red Guards are, but display due concern for his safety, the Jedi must.
Reports from Naval Command are garbled. Mace continued. It's clear that the attack caught the home fleet by surprise. Groups of Separatist ships managed to penetrate the envelope before the fleet had time to engage. Now, by all accounts, our vessels are holding the line.
Yoda adopted an expression that mixed anger and bafflement.
Monitoring hyperspace reversion points our commanders weren't?
Mace's eyes narrowed.
The Separatist fleet jumped from the deep core.
Secret those routes were. Known to us and few others.
Yoda looked at Mace. Mace went to the window wall and stared at the sky.
It's grievous. But he can't be planning to occupy Coruscant. There aren't enough battle droids in the entire galaxy for that.
Desperate he is,
Yoda said, more to himself.
It's not in his programming.
Yoda looked up.
Not grievous. Sidious.
Mace took a moment to answer.
If that's true, then we're closer to finding him than we thought. Still, he can't believe we'd call off the search now.
Demoralize Coruscant, Grievous will. Harry those who live in the heights and who wield power. Send them fleeing for safer havens, the attack will. Disrupt the Senate. Recall every available Jedi we must.
The holonet is down, Mace said. Surface communications are distorted by the defensive shields.
Yoda nodded.
Use the beacon, we will.
With the battle raging in space, and notwithstanding Mace Windu's command to the contrary, Dine had been tempted to suspend the search for Sidious's lair and report back to the intelligence division as he had ordered the other analysts to do. But as ARC Commander Valiant had pointed out, the search team's objective was as important to the war as the actions of the ships that were protecting Coruscant. So, while the team waited for intelligence to deliver additional probe droids, a search of the sub-basement had begun. Admittedly superficial and somewhat desultory, but only in response to the seeming impossibility of the task. Electronically tethered to the probe droids, Dine and the commandos had performed imagings of some of the partitions and walls and investigated numerous unlit hollows and recesses. He was as astonished as anyone when the hovering probe droids had led the team right back to where they had begun the search, where the footprints of their as-yet-unidentified quarry ended. The source of the unusual frequency was determined to be directly beneath them. The droids had discovered further that the ferrocrete floor panel thought to have been the end of the trail was actually a movable platform, not unlike a turbo lift, but powered hydraulically rather than by anti-grav repulsor. The search for a hidden control panel, such as had been detected at the niche, hadn't come to anything. But by broadcasting sounds, both within and outside the range of human hearing, the probe droids had ultimately conjured a response from the platform. Following what had sounded like a debate, the probe droids had chirped and bleated at the panel a second time. Issuing a resolved click, the panel had descended a couple of centimeters, then come to a halt. Dine recalled wondering where the platform's shaft could lead. Ground imaging scans had already shown the shaft to be 50 meters deep. 4 meters in length, the rectangular panel was large enough to accommodate the entire team, including the interpreter droid. Definitely the most dangerous place to be, Dine thought as he wedged himself among the commandos. The probe droids chirped instructions to the panel, and it began to drop.
slower than would have been the case had it answered to a repulsor lift. The wall of the circular shaft was ancient ceramicrete, cracked and stained in places.
If anyone's down here, Dine said to Valiant, they're probably aware we're on the way.
The commandos didn't need to be told. Weapons enabled, they hurried to firing positions the moment the platform came to a rest. 20 meters ahead of them, flickering light lanced from around the edges of a large metal door. Dine sent the droids to investigate, then studied the processor's data screen. One flesh and blood behind the door. He whispered to Valiant, readings also indicate the presence of droids. He looked at the Ark. It's your call, Commander. Valiant regarded the door.
We've come this far. I say we go in like we own the place.
Dine's heart began to race. Find, fix, finish.